Welcome to FedSoc Forums, a podcast of the Federal Society's Practice Groups. I'm Nate Kazmarek, Vice President and Director of Practice Groups at the Federal Society. For exclusive access to live recordings of FedSoc Forum programs, become a Federal Society member today at fedsoc.org.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this Federalist Society virtual event. My name is Edith Harold, and I'm an Assistant Director of Practice Groups with the Federalist Society. Today, we're excited to host this FedSoc forum called Antitrust and FTC Reform in the New Congress. Speaking with us today, we have Adam Sella, Thomas DiMatteo, Daniel Flores, and Linda Garcia. We're also joined by Svetlana Gans, a partner at Gibson, Dunn, and Crutcher, who will be moderating this discussion today. If you'd like to learn more about today's moderator or speakers, their full bios can be viewed on our website, fedsoc.org. At the end of the program, we may turn to the audience for questions. If you have a question, please enter it into the Q&A function at the bottom of your Zoom window, and we will do our best to answer as many as we can. And finally, I'll note that, as always, all expressions of opinion today are those of our guest speakers and not the Federalist Society. With that, Svetlana, thanks so much for joining us today, and I'll hand things over to you.
Great. Thank you so much, Edie, and thanks to Nate and the entire Federalist Society team for helping with this panel. As Edie said, my name is Svetlana. I'm the co-chair of the Antitrust Committee, and we are pleased today to be joined by superstars on Capitol Hill concerning FTC and antitrust reform measures that we could potentially see in this Congress. I'll be giving a brief bios of our speakers, and then we'll dive right into Q&A. As Edie mentioned, we will have a Q&A at the end of the session. So if you have questions, please put them in the chat feature in your screen. So first, we have Adam Sella. He's the chief counsel for the Administrative State Regulatory Reform and Antitrust at the House Committee on the Judiciary. Before that, he served with distinction as an attorney advisor to Commissioner Christine Wilson at the Federal Trade Commission, focusing on competition matters and regulatory reform. Next, we have Tom DiMatteo. Tom is chief counsel for the Senate Judiciary Committee. He previously served as counsel to the AAG of the Antitrust Division of the Department of Justice, where he worked closely with leadership and staff on civil merger, non-merger matters across numerous industries. Next, we have Daniel Flores. He's senior counsel on the Republican staff of the Committee on Oversight and Accountability from the House. During his time in this role, the committee notably released a report on the FTC entitled The Federal Trade Commission under Chair Lina Khan, under Biden-Harris, White House Influence and Sweeping Destruction of Agency Norms. Hopefully we'll talk about that report on this session. Prior to his current position, he served in the House as chief counsel for the House Judiciary Committee, Subcommittee on Regulatory Reform, Commercial and Antitrust Law. We are pleased to also welcome Linda Garcia, who's the chief counsel to Senator Cory Booker, a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Previously, she served with the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, where she oversaw the New Area of Public Safety Initiative to promote fair, safe, and effective policing through collaborative reform, and also served as a trial attorney in the Special Litigation Section in the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice. Thank you all so much for being here. So let me kick it off to the panelists to provide perhaps a few minute overview on the makeup of the congressional antitrust leadership and perhaps a few key priorities of each committee. So Tom, why don't I start with you?
Thanks, Alana, and thank you to the Federal Society for having me today. As a disclaimer, you know, the views that I express today are my own and they don't represent Senator Lee or anyone else in the Senate. So on that note, at a high overview in the Senate, for this new Congress, the 119th, Senator Lee on the Judiciary Committee is the chair of the Antitrust Subcommittee. And Senator Lee is joined by Senator Booker, who is the ranking member on the Antitrust Subcommittee. This marks a change in what we've seen over the last couple of Congresses, where it was Senator Lee and Senator Klobuchar who were rotating between being the chair and the ranker. Some of the historical things that were covered on the subcommittee really was a focus on big tech, but Senator Lee and Senator Klobuchar have both of them have separately and together bills regarding big tech and reform in that space. And there's also been a bipartisan approach to looking at, you know, popular mergers and having hearings focus on the, you know, Kroger Albertsons or some of the more headline hearing mergers have had hearings on the subcommittee. I look forward to this new Congress and working with Linda and Senator Booker's staff and evaluating some industries. You know, I think big tech is one of them for sure. I think there's competition issues across a variety of industries, healthcare, media, airlines. And I think those are some things that we'll see look at in this Congress.
Great. Thanks so much, Tom. Linda, how about you?
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks, first of all, for having me. So I'll just kind of give a big, an overview of Senator Booker, obviously, as the new ranking member on the subcommittee and kind of his orientation to antitrust. And so, again, and like Thomas, my views and so antitrust has developed a reputation. It was very much a technical term that confuses lay people. However, the concept of government protecting hard workers from unfair economic policies is clear and popular, even outside the DC Beltway. People understand their liberal their personal liberties are at stake in the face of corporate consolidation because of its effects on prices and wages. So when we're considering policy changes, the first question should always be, how can this help everyday Americans? How can this help small businesses prosper? And how can it help working families? Fortunately, as we've seen over the last decade, and starting with President Trump's first administration, strong enforcement of antitrust and consumer protection laws plays an enormous role in making lives better, not only addressing the problematic practices that are currently harming American consumers, but preventing those practices from occurring in the first instance. And so this is Senator Booker's orientation to antitrust and consumer protection. In a survey of New Jersey voters conducted just before the last election, the economy and fiscal issues were cited as their top concerns. More than half the voters said they found it very or somewhat difficult to afford rent or mortgage payments and groceries and other food. Half said the same about healthcare and medical costs. So consumer welfare especially suffers when prices increase, but the product, service, quality, and choice availability decrease. We've seen this reality play out the last several years. Senator Booker has long focused on one issue that most Americans today are feeling acutely, and this is food production and grocery prices. He has two bills that he has long advocated for in this space. The first one, the Farm Systems Reform Act, it would amend the Packers and Stockyards Act to protect farmers and ranchers from predatory purchasing practices and creating market transparency. Specifically, forward contracts would have to contain a firm base price and have an open public bidding process. The farm system has also become hyper-consolidated from seed to supermarket with a small number of major agribusiness, commodity processing, food manufacturing, and supermarket firms controlling every link of the food chain. Today, there's 2 million farm workers who sell into an ever more concentrated marketplace that has reduced the prices they receive for their crops and livestock and contributed to the collapsing farm income. This is especially true somewhere like the Garden State. So the Food and Agribusiness Merger Moratorium and Antitrust Review Act would set up a commission to study how to strengthen antitrust oversight of the farm and food sectors and publish recommended improvements to merger enforcement. It would halt the mergers in the food system until Congress acts on these recommendations. So this is just one industry where consolidation and integration matter, both vertical and horizontal. We're also looking at labor practices such as no-poach agreements between competing companies, which have had a lot of effects in New Jersey and other states. So we're looking forward to having the opportunity to work in a bipartisan way on these issues on the subcommittee and to tackle other issues that Thomas actually brought up, anti-competitive practices in big tech, housing, and healthcare. And with big tech, it is an area where Senator Booker is very, very supportive of innovation. And so we want to be able to strike that delicate balance between anti-like monopolies and the anti-competitive practices and ensuring that there's innovation.
Great. Thank you so much for that overview. Really appreciate it. Adam, how about you?
Thanks, Alana. And I'll repeat what everyone else has said, that the views expressed today are my own and certainly not those of the chairman or any members of Congress or the committee. The House is a little bit different than the Senate. Well, it's different than the Senate in a lot of ways, but it's also different in the committee makeup. Chairman Jordan leads the Judiciary Committee, and most of the work happens at the committee level. Chairman Fitzgerald is chairman of the Antitrust Subcommittee, and he will certainly lead hearings, but my boss is Chairman Jordan. And then there's Ranking Member Raskin, who is also the Judiciary Ranker, and then Ranker Nadler for the antitrust level. Last Congress at the Judiciary Committee, we did a lot of oversight of the FTC, some of the DOJ Antitrust Division as well when it was warranted. We also looked into some private actors in the ESG space, specifically with oil and gas regarding the asset managers, and in the advertising and group boycott space. This Congress, the 119th, there will be additional oversight of the executive branch and new issues that will emerge in the private sector as well. I'll just highlight one issue right now that's already emerging is how the European Commission's regulations, especially in the tech and antitrust space, are affecting Americans. But I'm sure we'll have more of that to discuss as this panel goes on.
Great. Thank you so much. Adam and Tom, you both worked in the previous Trump administration or as a Republican in the Biden administration. Can you perhaps look in your crystal ball and tell us what your expectations are for antitrust enforcement in Trump 2 and how they may differ from what President Biden pursued and perhaps what President Trump pursued initially in his first term?
Sure, I can start. I think there were big advancements in both the Trump 1 and Biden administrations in antitrust. And antitrust is not supposed to be static. The Supreme Court has said as much in Kimball v. Marvel. So it's certainly good that antitrust has not been static. Not everything that enforcers try to do is going to be a victory. But you can examine the administrations and what they did. Trump obviously kicked off the large big tech investigations and ultimately brought two cases. The Facebook case is still ongoing, headed to trial, but has survived all the way and will be at trial shortly. And then obviously the first Google case that was a success. The Biden administration changed the antitrust in many ways. And I'm sure we're going to touch on a lot of that. I don't think the Trump administration, Trump 2, is going to change much in terms of just trying to undo everything the Biden administration did. I think they're just going to try to do things differently where appropriate. I think the Trump administration is certainly going to be very aggressive. I mentioned the ESG and GARM work that the committee did last Congress. Both Commissioner Holyoake, Chairman Ferguson, as well as nominee Gail Slater have all talked about our GARM work specifically as an area where cartels can be examined in a new, novel, and aggressive way. I think there'll also be things that are different, but there are some ways in which the Biden administration did things differently even between the two agencies, and the Trump administration is going to chart its own path. For example, in consent agreements, there was a difference between the FTC and the DOJ. The FTC was very aggressive with its consent agreements. You can look at specific ones like the Amgen agreement and the Pioneer and Hess agreements. Those are three different agreements where most commentators said that the cases, if they were litigated, they were maybe fairly weak. The parties would have had a strong case, but the FTC was able to get consents. And why? If you examine the consent in Amgen, it looks largely like the consent was just don't do illegal bundling. I'm overly simplifying that. And then Pioneer and Hess, it was to take certain people off the board, but allowing mergers worth billions and billions, tens of billions of dollars to go through. And obviously the press releases in those cases were very, very strong. But a question, how much was actually achieved by these? Now then you can look at the Biden DOJ, where they largely abandoned consents and said, it's not my job to try to regulate you into a consent. You're going to bring cases or you're going to fix your issues on your own. That's something that the Trump administration will have to examine. And there's not necessarily a right or wrong answer. And I'm sure the Trump administration is, just as Kimball v. Marvel called for, going to advance antitrust in its own ways as well.
Adam, great work hitting on all the important high points. I'd just like to add, the through line, not only through Trump one and Biden was the on the big tech front, but I think also in some of these more novel merger enforcement actions. So you look at AT&T Time Warner as the first vertically enforced case in decades. You look at Visa Plaid, which was abandoned by the parties with the nascent competitor theories. I think some of these theories, there's a strong through line between Trump one, Biden, and then a new Trump administration. I suspect, as Adam pointed out, that there's going to be strong enforcement. There's going to be a skepticism to bad remedies, which is often presented by the parties to the agencies. And I think they will reconsider whether or not consent decrees are the right approach. And I think if you do see consent decrees used, I think you'll see them more along the structural approach, where there's clean divestitures and a preference for that over behavioral decrees that are more of a regulatory posture. I do suspect that FTC would probably move away from engaging in competition rulemaking. I think that's probably a change that we'd see at FTC. And the Robinson-Patman cases that were pushed through in the last administration, I think there's going to be some scrutiny on those cases and to really reevaluate those.
Great. Thanks so much. Linda, how about you? Any predictions?
We don't have that crystal ball, right? And so Adam and Thomas hit a lot on some of the things that we expect, especially going to the structural versus behavioral remedies. I'll say that some things we're keeping an eye out, like the questions are going to be, I think, the biggest one, probably resources, right? And so, is there going to be a contraction within the antitrust division? Because already to manage those cases takes a lot of human capital. And so if that effort or if that has to increase, will there be new cases brought, especially making it less expensive and less time consuming for the government to enforce these new cases? And also full access to the merger filing fees. And so that would really help, I think, support the antitrust division work in a way that would minimize having to use taxpayer funds.
Great, thanks so much. So turning back to congressional reforms, there have been several reforms introduced in the last Congress and talked about, including, for example, the Smarter Act, the One Agency Act, the TEAMS Act, the America Act. And I'm curious just what the panel's expectations are for specific reforms in the new Congress. So, Adam, why don't I turn to you first?
Sure. So the Judiciary Committee in the House moved the One Agency Act last Congress. I believe that was the first time it's been moved out of committee, although the bill, I believe, was originally introduced by Senator Lee. Mr. Klein from Virginia has already introduced the bill in the House again this Congress, and I'll leave it to Tom to comment on whether that will be reintroduced, has already been reintroduced, or will be moved to the Senate this year. Another reform we hear about a lot is 13B. A lot of people want to what they call a 13B fix for the FTC, and just as a reminder, the FTC lost a lot of its 13B power at the Supreme Court in a 9-0 decision. The Supreme Court found that the FTC does not have the power to seek or a court to award equitable monetary relief. A fix is actually not that simple, however, because it might require other changes, including possibly changing the administrative court process or the appeals process or even the rulemaking process. The reason is the FTC only has injunctive power in the statute because the FTC was set up with other unique powers. But as the FTC increasingly acts as an executive law enforcement agency, reforms will be needed to address this new normal that's really existed for decades at this point. And it's important. I want to note that reform is necessary. Reform does not necessarily mean weakening the FTC, but it's necessary because of statutory and constitutional issues facing the agency. Just look at the Axon case, which is another case the FTC lost, and I know at the Supreme Court. The FTC, they are challenged a consummated merger, and the investigation began during the first Trump administration. And the FTC fought Axon all the way to the Supreme Court. And all Axon wanted was the right to bring its constitutional challenges in federal court. And then when Axon won, the FTC dropped the case. They stopped going after the consummated merger to break it up. That is a sign of problems. You can also look at Humphrey's executor. The Trump administration and the chairman of the FTC do not support Humphrey's executor. They're calling on an open firing of commissioners when appropriate. And that may call the constitutionality of bipartisan and independent commissions altogether. And there's others, but the point is that if these are not addressed, there's going to be more Supreme Court losses and more cases the FTC abandons. We're already seeing respondents in the FTC bringing these cases and going to court with them.
Great. Tom, why don't I turn to you and then turn to Linda?
Sure. So the One Agency Act, as Adam mentioned, really addresses what I think is government overlap, inefficiencies. If you take a step back, in the U.S., we have two antitrust agencies, the FTC and DOJ. If you're building an antitrust regime from the ground up and starting at step zero, no one would have two federal agencies that does on the competition side. It's really inefficient. For those of you who've worked at the agency, the merger clearance process, it can be really challenging, especially those reviewing HSRs on a 15-day cash tender offer or in a 30-day typical window. When you're fighting each agency for clearance, that window shrinks, and it's harder to actually get good eyes on the merger review, and often the parties have to pull in their file, and it creates delays that shouldn't occur. The industries are allocated to DOJ and FTC in a non-public way. And then often you have the heads of the FTC and DOJ negotiating with one another to what cases they get on the conduct side. So none of this really is transparent. None of it is efficient. It doesn't make sense. So the One Agency Act would fold the FTC's Bureau of Competition into DOJ to create one federal agency that does antitrust enforcement. DOJ already has the criminal enforcement piece, so it would bring in FTC's civil side of antitrust enforcement into DOJ. Again, it we've advocated internationally for other countries to do this. When we go out internationally, currently we have two different voices, the FTC and DOJ, speaking the United States abroad. It just doesn't make sense from any way you really look at it to have two federal agencies doing the exact same thing. So the One Agency Act would remedy this problem. So Lana, you mentioned the Smarter Act. The Smarter Act is kind of an incremental step. It doesn't fold in FTC to DOJ, but what it does is it actually levels the playing field across DOJ and FTC for them to be held to the same standard. So it would eliminate the FTC's ability to use the administrative process for merger challenges. It would increase consistency in preliminary injunctions, and it would force FTC to go to a federal court instead of their administration, the ALJ. So that part of the process. This would at least have consistency across merger review. So the federal agencies will be held to the exact same standard and not a divergent standard between FTC and DOJ. And as I said previously, it's not public and clear to companies when they merge about who's going to be reviewing the deal. So it's challenging for companies putting together deals to figure out what agency is actually going to look at their deal and then what standard they're held to differs by each agency. And just to be clear on the One Agency Act, it's folks who are opposed to it claim that it will somehow weaken competition, weaken enforcement, and, you know, allow bad actors in the antitrust space to get away with more stuff. That is not the point of the Privacy Act. It's supposed to make the agencies more efficient. So it frees up, as Linda mentioned, you know, human resources at the agencies is always a hot topic, and there's limited, finite resources when it comes to actually getting the mission accomplished. Eliminating duplicative processes would actually help free up resources and better enforce the antitrust laws than our current setup.
Okay, great. Thanks, Tom. We could talk about a few other bills in a bit, but Linda, I know you have to leave us shortly. So any feedback on the One Agency Act or the Smarter Act or other specific reforms on the antitrust side?
Sure. So, you know, as we're looking at these bills in this area of the work, we certainly want to work in a bipartisan manner with Senator Lee on these issues. You know, there are concerns with any attempts to curtail the effectiveness of current improving antitrust enforcement, especially as we're kind of like looking at it all through the government efficiency lens. So, you know, things that we are thinking about is the fact that each agency has developed expertise in their particular industry or market that they have jurisdiction over. And so, for example, in the One Act, what would this look like if they were folded into each other? Right now, we know that, you know, according to GAO, conflict between DOJ and FTC after the clearance process is completed is pretty rare. They found no instances of FTC directly commenting on a DOJ case, and only six instances of DOJ commenting on an FTC case without being a party of the litigation. In four of six cases, DOJ actually expressed the views in support of FTC's position. So it is, you know, I think keeping those things in mind is important, right? We just don't want to do anything that kind of starts to choke off the effectiveness of either one, of DOJ or FTC.
Great. Thanks so much. So let's turn over to Daniel and get him in this discussion. Daniel, your committee authored a report on procedural due process and agency norms at the Federal Trade Commission. I was hoping you could talk a little bit about the conclusions in your report and perhaps map those conclusions to the discussion we've been having so far in terms of congressional reform areas for the Federal Trade Commission.
Thanks, Adlana. I'd be happy to do that. Thanks to you and to the Federalist Society for having me here today. Like my colleagues, I'll mention that I'm here just in my personal capacity. I'm not going to express views on behalf of the chairman or the other members of the committee, but I hope that my comments will be helpful to you. I know this is principally an antitrust audience. It may be that most or all of you are more familiar with the judiciary committees and their antitrust jurisdiction than with the Oversight and Government Reform Committee that I serve on. So let me just quickly give you a little sketch of this committee. We're the principal investigative body of the House, set up under the House rules. We can exercise jurisdiction to investigate any matter at any time under those rules, and we do. We do a lot of hard thinking to try and triage all the different things that we could choose among for launching investigations and things like that. Last term, the FTC shot very high up in the queue, so to speak, following the resignation of Christine Wilson in February of 2023. We had already been exercising oversight over the FTC before that, but her resignation and the reasons she cited for it that were grounded in accusations that Chair Khan was essentially engaged in rampant disregard of ethics standards at the commission, of due process for folks before the agency, and over the rule of law, were so alarming that we decided to open a full-scale investigation into the committee. We also were concerned with what we saw because, in addition to our investigative jurisdiction, we have a pretty substantial amount of jurisdiction legislatively over government operations and regulatory issues across the various federal regulatory agencies. And we also have the legislative jurisdiction over ethics, in the federal government. So what we were hearing from the circumstances of Commissioner Wilson's resignation very much got our attention. We began our investigation in June of 23. And we at the core of our investigation, we focused on those three issues I mentioned earlier: ethics, due process, rule of law. We found some other things that were of concern to us. We talked about them in our report, which we published in October of last year after a year plus of sustained investigative activity. I want to say we must have issued, I believe it's up to 17 specific letters on different issues to the FTC over the course of the investigation. And what we found in a nutshell was that based on everything that we had seen, Commissioner Wilson was right. I mean, Chair Kahn really did preside over what we regarded as a historic and breathtaking departure from FTC norms, past FTC practices, disregard for the rule of law. We were very concerned, especially at the heart of things, over violations of what we could either call like formal due process or, small p due process in terms of standards of practice at the agency for agencies being investigated and challenged, et cetera. As I said, we published our report in October of 23. You can find it on the committee's website under the reports tab. They're on the website, and we really did find things to be consistent with what Chair Wilson had said, and also with what others who wrote about the FTC under Chair Kahn's administration had raised as significant concerns. Those include, for example, former Chairman Tim Muris and former Director of the Bureau of Economics, Howard Beals. With regard to the due process issues that you highlighted, Svetlana, I mean, what we found was essentially the weakening of respect for process for parties being investigated and challenged, the sort of dismantling might be not quite the right word for it, but essentially a departure from many, many of the procedures that regulated parties have come to rely on over the decades at the FTC to understand, like, might they come under challenge by the agency for mergers that they proposed? If they were challenged for those issues, how would the challenge play out? What could they plan on? How could they engage with the agency? Could they expect to engage in constructive settlement negotiations? The list goes on and on. And what we found was that under Chair Kahn, essentially all of those, you know, bones in the skeleton of how the FTC's antitrust jurisdiction over mergers had been administered over the decades fell apart. And in what appeared to us to be a strategic way in which the commission under the chair essentially launched an interim campaign against merger activity. I mean, the basic thrust of the administration seemed to be that big is bad, mergers are therefore bad, we don't want mergers. So a host of procedural protections and practices were dropped, creating vast uncertainty for merging parties and a real decline in what could have been more constructive mergers. I know that's quite a mouthful that I just ran through, but that's at the heart of what we found on due process. I want to highlight for you, too, in the vein of sort of rules collapsing, practices being parted from norms being broken, something that one of the commentators on the FTC, Adam White, who's at AEI and George Mason Law, highlighted in a paper he wrote on Chair Kahn's term. He noted that, you know, as basically the list of concerns grew, progressives began to be concerned about the potential backlash from Congress and the courts. And they raised the concern that perhaps Chair Kahn might be breaking the FTC. And, you know, many people, I think, would regard that as a fair concern. Non-progressives had plenty of concerns as well. But what he highlighted is perhaps the biggest concern of all was the overarching concern, and I'll quote him, that we should all worry that Shere Khan is breaking something more important than just the FTC, that by pulling down longstanding rules, overstepping legal bounds, and leveraging the threat of legal uncertainty, that Shere Khan was teaching powerful regulators to rule beyond mere rules, which, as we all know, that is something that is very contrary to the American impulse in government. And it's deeply, deeply concerning. It leads me to turn back to the reform questions that you indicated at the start of Svetlana. I mean, there are a host of things to be concerned about that fall in the general rubric of what Adam was describing. Some of those map to legislative reforms, including some of the reforms that we talked about today. Some of those, I think, map to, I won't necessarily call it reform, but heightened congressional oversight is probably the best way to put it, you know, so that the Article I branch exercises more active oversight, both, you know, honestly, during the nominations process in the wake of the experience we just had with this particular chair, and after confirmation, to try and police more actively things that might be going off the rails at the commission. But then there are also possibilities for important internal reforms. For example, very early in her tenure, Shere Khan led the commission to sweep aside a host of procedural guardrails on the exercise of the commission's rulemaking authority. Those had existed for a long time and were very protective against overreach. But they were swept away. Those could be restored by the agency if it sought to do that. There could be a restoration, voluntarily so, at the commission, of adherence to what had been traditional sustained commission norms in investigations and in other activities over many decades. And there could be a lot done to try and restore morale of the staff. That was essentially beaten into the ground under Shere Khan's administration. And then there's the issue of independence at this independent commission. That's something that lawmakers can exercise oversight of. That's something that can be respected and watched in other ways. But it's also something that calls upon the commission to exercise its own discipline and will to restore itself to the standards it formerly held in that vein. I guess I went on for a while there. I'll hold it at that point, but I hope that was all helpful.
Yeah, that was super helpful. Tom and Adam, as you hear Daniel's discussion about the conclusions in the report, does that inform on any congressional measures as to FTC process and procedure that may not be included in the Smarter Act, for example, and not the One Agency Act, which is what solves some of it, but not all of the things that Daniel was talking about. Adam, let me start with you since you worked with Commissioner Wilson when she was at the FTC, and then Tom, I'll turn it to you.
I did work with Commissioner Wilson. There certainly were substantive agreements, disagreements and agreements, I should say, but certainly substantive disagreements, a lot of which Daniel raised there. I think in terms of thinking about Congress acting, we know it's going to have to be bipartisan to get through the Senate. And if we really want to fix these problems, I think we really need to think about the FTC as an institution and what its weaknesses are, what its constitutional problems are, what its statutory problems are, because there's always going to be disagreements between whether Shere Khan was effective or not. Certainly my old boss and in other comments and other panels I've had certain thoughts about where Shere Khan did a bad job and where Shere Khan did a good job. But ultimately, the FTC is seriously in peril as an agency, all possibly bipartisan independent commissions are. And we need to take a real look at that. And then obviously, when we're thinking about the FTC, think about what Tom said earlier, that why do we have, if we're going to fix this, and we're going to look at it from a constitutional statutory perspective, why do we have two agencies basically at this point doing the exact same thing?
Great. Thanks, Tom.
Daniel's comments struck me in that we're also doing duplicative oversight. So there's another efficiency there that can free up resources on the Hill to ensure that there's other things that we can do. And if we have two agencies, there's two oversight responsibilities. And again, another inefficiency of FTC. And I think Adam kind of touched on the reforms side of things with his experience at FTC specifically. But yeah, I think now is a moment where these ideas need to be fully considered and kind of advanced. I think this is a unique time and a short window to kind of accomplish any type of meaningful.
All right, so we have a lot of questions in the Q&A, so I want to be mindful that we'll hopefully get to some of those questions. But before we do, I wanted to ask Adam and Tom and Daniel about any CRA measures on the antitrust side. There's obviously the non-compete rule, the HSR rules, and so forth, and just wondering your take on potential CRA measures focusing on antitrust issues. So Tom, I'll start it with you or Adam, whoever wants to go first.
Happy to go first. I think really at this point, it's probably unlikely that in this, on the side we're going to see inertia behind CRA regarding the antitrust reforms. I think, the new HSR form is put in place. I think we saw both Commissioner Ferguson and Acting Assistant Attorney General Amita Safi both endorsed the new HSR form, and I think that probably put this to bed.
Yeah, I'll just comment that you've heard it from Senator Lee's number one staffer there that, we know that Chairman Ferguson made a comment in favor of the HSR form. Both the DOJ and the FTC, Chairman Ferguson, the current acting AAG, and I believe Gail Slater as well, in her testimony, made positive comments about the guidelines, which are also potentially CRA-able, but I don't, just based on what, Tom's words exactly, whether we're going to see any movement there when the administration seems to be lining up behind these aspects. I think you're just going to have to wait and see then if there's a large, large movement of members of Congress that want to push it anyway. Right now, I don't see that.
And Svetlana, I can offer you a couple of broader thoughts here. There is a great deal of member interest in engaging in activity under the CRA. As we all know, at the start of the last Trump administration, there was an historic uptick in CRA resolutions that were passed out of both chambers and enacted. So I think there's a lot of interest in seeing that kind of thing happen again. One difference between now and 2017, hard to say, it seems so long ago, but is that the Biden administration gamed very heavily the possibility they had of getting their priority rules out well in advance of the time at which the so-called carryover window under the CRA would subject rules of theirs to review in the succeeding Congress. In the end, that deadline ended up being around August 1st. I think there was some thought it might extend well before that in the year, even into May. So most of the big Biden administration rules came out by the end of May in 2024. And what that means is there are far fewer targets on the landscape right now. What you might see is that that might increase the pressure on there being a CRA on some of the FTC rules that fall within that post August 1 window, because the number of other candidates that might otherwise like top them beat the window's opening. I myself, I'm not aware of any CRA yet being introduced on FTC rule. I want to say I might have seen one on the HSR rule, but I'm not recalling clearly. But we'll see how things unfold.
Okay. And what about the non-compete rulemaking or just competition rulemaking in general?
I don't think anything's been filed on that. I'm pretty sure nothing's been filed yet on that one.
Okay, so I'm going to go to audience questions. And as a reminder, audience, if you have questions, please type it in your Q&A button on the bottom and we'll try to get to it. I think, Tom, this question is for you. Is Senator Lee going to reintroduce the America Act?
That's a good question, Svetlana. As unlike the House, here in the Senate, we've been busy doing nominees. So as we work through the nominees and focus on subcommittee work, you know, I think that bill the America Act has received bipartisan support across the board. And it, you know, and just a reminder to folks, I forgot about this. Every new Congress, you have to reintroduce every bill. So we're getting a lot of incoming requests for co-sponsors, and we're looking at that as another main pieces to introduce the Congress.
Okay. Adam, I have a question in terms of FTC Part 3 litigation. What's the future?
I think the future is likely in the Supreme Court's hands unless Congress can come together. And again, it would have to be bipartisan to address any possible constitutional issues. What you see here is that this FTC and the DOJ split up jurisdiction somewhat arbitrarily over companies and industry. And then the FTC has the power to largely enforce the same laws or similar laws or a law that is interpreted within the confines of the Sherman Act within their own court. And within their own court, the commissioners decide that what cases to prosecute, and they vote it out. And then they put up an imaginary wall between them and the court and the staff prosecuting the case. An ALJ makes a decision, and the commissioners step back in and act as appellate judges, where they can do de novo review of the facts and the law. And then ultimately, after all of that, a party or parties can appeal to a circuit court, but a circuit court doesn't do de novo review of facts. So there is a serious issue about prosecutor and judges being wearing the same hat. Most members of Congress, when they realize this, find it very, very troubling. And we have seen the Supreme Court be very concerned about the administrative state. We know some of the newer justices certainly have hostile views towards the administrative state. So I think that there's going to be major changes. The question for Congress simply is, do we let the Supreme Court change it or do we fix it first?
Okay. That sounds good. So, Tom, it's like a lightning round. So sorry about that. So here's another question. Tom, will Senator Lee hold hearings on his version of the One Agency Act?
Thank you for the question. You know, similar to the America Act, you know, it's an important piece of legislation that certainly is introduced before. And you know, the American Act has had hearings. One Agency Act, you know, it could be interesting to have a hearing to discuss reforms and kind of highlight the important pieces of the One Agency Act. So it's certainly something that that I'll take a look at.
Thanks for that. Another question, Adam, you mentioned sticking within the confines of statutory authority. So let me ask you about the Section 5 policy statement. What's the future hold for that?
I think the best way to look at the future is look at the past of the Section 5 policy statement, in that I'm not sure how it was actually used at all. It's very hard to read. It's very hard to interpret. It's unclear if it does limit the powers of Section 5 at all, or in what ways it's trying to set define Section 5. It seems very, very broad. That's not helpful. That's not like the merger guidelines that are bipartisan and advancements in citing the law as it exists. Now, Section 5 of the FTC Act certainly is supposed to be outside of the Sherman Act, but it's unclear how. And I think writing a very expansive statement, a guideline that really doesn't help clarify anything for parties or a judge, isn't going to go far in making Section 5 a powerful tool for antitrust enforcement. So either it likely is just not going to be used effectively, or hopefully a bipartisan commission, FTC, can take a look and try to make something that is actually usable for both parties and the FTC to prosecute cases.
Tom, any views on your end?
I think I don't about covered it.
Okay. All right. Turning back to audience questions, or continuing on with the audience questions, can we expect the Trump administration to modify or pull some of the Kahn era anti-big tech antitrust cases?
I do not know the answer to this, but I think at this stage, the way the cases are progressing, you would need to have a settlement that largely wins the case for you. Otherwise, it seems that Chair Ferguson and Gail Slater are going to march forward. I don't think any of those cases race to some level of clearly erroneous or embarrassment. In fact, in some ways, they're all strong and could win on certain counts. So I do not see any inclination that they're just going to withdraw them as bad cases.
Tom, any sense from you?
Yeah, no, I think that's right, Adam. As we pointed out earlier on the panel, this is really the Trump administration in Trump's first term that brought a lot of these cases, either by filing the complaint or opening the investigation across during the big tech platform review that was announced. So I don't see that unless there's some great remedy that's put on the table that fixes every possible concern. I just don't see these cases being settled or pulled.
Okay. Next question. Would the House and Senate committee consider folding the CFPB into the FTC as part of consideration of the One Agency Act?
That is a fantastic question for a member of Energy and Commerce and the Financial Services Committee. I'm sure Tom or Daniel or any of us would love to write an expansive piece of legislation that combines all of the extraneous commissions and agencies that do overlapping work and make a more efficient government. That's unfortunately not how Congress works, though. So the One Agency Act is limited in that is that antitrust falls in judiciary. Consumer protection does not fall under judiciary. But certainly someone could take a look at the CFPB, the FTC, Consumer Protection, the Consumer Product Safety Commission. There are others, and make a more efficient agency in that space as well. It's just not going to be a judiciary issue.
Okay. Next question. What is the timing on Mark Meadows' confirmation hearing and a full Senate vote to be an FTC commissioner?
That's a great question. Requires a little crystal ball gazing. Look, I think just at the outset, the Trump administration has really done a good job of selecting highly qualified nominees early on in order to get them through the Senate and nominated to the Senate and confirmed and put in place. I think as you saw, Gail Slater, she did really well in her hearing, and we're moving as judiciously as possible and trying to get her through as quickly as we possibly can. And I think that same applies to Mark. Mark is, of course, Senator Lee Staffer and an incredible antitrust lawyer in mind. So I suspect it will hopefully go as quickly as possible and hopefully in the next weeks, at least for a committee hearing.
Okay. Go ahead, Adam.
I'll just say hi to Mark. Thanks for listening to the panel. Sorry, Tom didn't have a better answer for you.
I don't know if it was Mark, but it was an anonymous attendee. Rare, just kidding. Okay, so I want to ask a question in terms of the cases or the investigations that were opened, kind of the midnight dash leaving the commission. What is your sense in terms of what the agencies might do with those types of cases that were kind of rushed out the door, investigations rushed out the door immediately before the transition?
I can go first. I think to some extent we're all guessing here, but obviously there were things that rushed out the door, the activity that we saw at the FTC over the last three weeks or even post-election was just a lot. I think the best place to look for this is what Chair Ferguson wrote about each one of those cases or how he voted on each one of those cases, whether he had enough time to evaluate it. But ultimately, the real issue is that unlike a traditional executive branch enforcement agency, the chairman of the FTC cannot just undo a case. So the issue here is, when does Mark get in? And then once Mark is in, assuming both Commissioner Slaughter and Commissioner Bedoya would not support whatever Chairman Ferguson wants to do to change a case that was already voted out, do Commissioner Holyoke and Commissioner Metter support Chair Ferguson in changing the structure of a case? Those are really, really complicated questions. It's going to take time. It takes effort just to figure this all out. And then you have to examine where each case is at that point. So unlike a case that was just going through DOJ, the FTC operates differently. It's one of the unique attributes of an independent bipartisan commission.
So, Daniel, what would be kind of your top three list of congressional reforms that Adam and Tom should consider this Congress based on your report or otherwise? Oh, I think you might be on mute. I'm sorry. All right, you're off mute, so we could hear you. Oh, I think we're having problems with your microphone. I'm sorry.
Can you hear me now, Svetlana?
Yes. Thank you. Sorry.
Okay, good. Yeah. Sorry about that. I was just saying, I hesitate to give you a top three list, I would defer substantially to my colleagues on the two committees of jurisdiction there, and to my colleagues on energy and commerce about how to triage the competing reforms. I do believe, however, that it's a very ripe moment for reform. And I believe, based on what we uncovered in our report, what others have said, for example, in the Mears-Beals report I alluded to earlier, we've all seen a very salutary lesson in what very aggressive, ideologically forward-leaning leaders of agencies can trigger in terms of blowback from Congress, from the courts, from those they're charged to regulate, that can lead to very big reform moments and the evaporation of things they overreached for. So like I said, I'll leave it to them to triage things, but I think there are a host of good choices, and I look forward to some action being taken.
Okay, so we have just a few moments left, so I'll just ask the last remaining audience questions, and just a reminder, if you have a question, please submit it in the Q&A function. So Tom, I guess this question is for you. What type of legislative majority would be required for legislation that would abolish the Federal Trade Commission?
abolish the Federal Trade Commission, completely abolish the federal. So that seems like to be broader than the One Agency Act. That's a good question. Thankfully, in this job, I don't have to go around and count votes for things. So I'm not exactly sure what that threshold would look like.
Okay. Alrighty. So I think that covers the questions. Oh, one more question. Any thoughts on the Robinson-Patman Act?
I mean, I think look at what Chair Ferguson wrote in the case that was filed at the very end of the Biden administration. That may ultimately be the future of the Robinson-Patman Act. I think there was bipartisan interest in it. It ultimately didn't end bipartisan. Chair Ferguson and Commissioner Holyoake had very, very bad things to say about that, the facts and the law of that case. So that ultimately will probably go through litigation. But if Chair Ferguson is correct in his assessment of the case, it won't last very long.
Okay. Apparently I missed one audience question, and I'm just going to read it quickly, and then I know we're at time. It is notable that the One Agency Act has moved, and likewise notable that FTC Chair Ferguson was in the audience for Gail Slater's nomination hearing, noting that his reason for being there was as a fellow antitrust enforcer. Do you envision that the FTC will be more vocal in attempting to assert that it has a legitimate role in antitrust enforcement before Congress, given the movement of the OAA, or do you anticipate any of those efforts would be effective in this new Congress?
Happy to take that. In that question is built in a more vocal. I think it's hard for the FTC to be more vocal than it has been the last 4 years on enforcement efforts. So that's, hard to say. I think the FTC is going to continue bringing the cases that come to them through the HSR process and continuing the big tech cases. They, just like DOJ, they have congressional relations folks. So I don't kind of expect too much to change on that front from where we've already been.
All right. Well, thank you all for being here with us and for answering the lightning round at the end. We greatly appreciate your time and wisdom. And thanks to the audience. We had over 100 folks join us for today's webinar. So thank you, audience, for joining us. And Edie, I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks, Vilana. And yeah, just to echo on behalf of the Federalist Society, thanks so much to Adam, Tom, Daniel, and Linda for speaking with us today, and Svetlana for moderating. We're so grateful for your time and expertise. Thank you also to our audience for joining us. We really appreciate your participation. You can stay up to date with announcements or upcoming webinars on our website, fedsoc.org, or on all major social media platforms. Thank you once more for tuning in, and we are adjourned.
Thank you for listening to this episode of FedSoc Forums, a podcast of the Federal Society's Practice Groups. For more information about the Federal Society, the Practice Groups, and to become a Federal Society member, please visit our website at fedsoc.org.